visiting animal sanctuaries is so wonderful because even though it's a tiny, minuscule percentage of the animals suffering in the agriculture system, we at least see some hope and we see some joy. And even with companion animals, their joy is so infectious.
You have more power over your health than what you've been told. This is the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions Podcast. I'm Maya Acosta, and I'm passionate about finding healthy lifestyle solutions to support optimal human health. If you're willing to go with me, together we can discover how simple lifestyle choices can help improve our quality of life and increase longevity in a big way. Let's get started. All right. So welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Maya Acosta, and my next guest doesn't really need much of an introduction, but I'm so excited that she's here anyway to tell us all sorts of things in terms of being vegan. And so I have Victoria Morin on the show. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you so much.
So I'm excited to have you. Did I pronounce your last name okay?
Well, sort of. It's actually Moran, but Oprah Winfrey pronounces it Morin. And when I was on the first time, my husband says, well, you better change how you say your name because a lot more people know you as Morin now than they ever did as Moran.
Yeah. So when you go on other shows, how do you pronounce your last name?
It's Moran. Yeah.
It's your last name. Okay.
But, you know, Oprah's kind of, you know, even now, Empress of the Universe, you know, she speaks and the world responds. So cool woman. Yep. Maybe one of these days we'll get her plant-based.
So now I want to talk about Oprah because I was a big fan, like many people. I watched her back in the day a lot more. And once a person made it to Oprah Winfrey, it's like they made it. So tell us what your experience was like. How did you end up on her show?
Oh, well, I'm working on my 14th book. So all my books are about well-being or eclectic spirituality, a lot of books for women, kind of in the self-help genre. And certainly in the 1990s and early 2000s, if you wrote books like that, you wanted to be on Oprah. It just made you a real author. So I wanted that desperately. And the first time they called was the week before my wedding in 1997. And they said, are you going to be available next week? And I said, well, we were planning to take a honeymoon. And the producer said, it really wouldn't be a good idea. So we didn't. We canceled it. Okay. And they didn't call on Monday, but they called on Tuesday. And the producer was saying, you know, what kind of dress did you wear for your wedding? What kind of cake and what kind of flowers? And it's like, oh boy, when she got to the flowers, I knew she was trying to let me down easy. And she did indeed say, well, the episode has taken a different direction, which was devastating. But I was busy working on another book, my book, Creating a Charmed Life, which is my biggest seller ever. So when that book finally came out and I was on tour with it, the call came again. And they said, we want you. We want to film at your home, which was then my home in Kansas City. And we want to do this on Tuesday of next week with your book, Shelter for the Spirit, which was the previous book, the one they had stood me up on before. And I said, oh, but you don't understand. The new book is Creating a Charmed Life. And she said, we want Shelter for the Spirit. And the subtext of that is, you know, we've got a line of authors around the block. You guys are a dime a dozen. Take it or leave it. So I was like, okay, I'll be there. She didn't say that, but I knew she was thinking that. So I got back from the tour Sunday night. Monday, a cleaning crew came in and the two of them and the one of me cleaned everything, scrubbed baseboards. And then Tuesday morning, the Oprah crew came. They filmed for 9 hours and made a beautiful, really, really beautiful 3-minute segment. And that used to be called Remembering Your Spirit. If you were a regular viewer, you probably remember that. And when it was over, Oprah said, that was beautiful. Wasn't that beautiful? And I'm just sitting there like, oh my God. And even though that time I didn't meet Oprah, didn't go to Chicago, just the fact that I had been on and she had said it was beautiful, it was like getting a degree from Harvard. And I would just call a radio station anywhere in the country and say, I was on Oprah yesterday. Okay, when do you want to be on? It just opened these doors. So I still wanted to be on in the Sanctum Sanctorum and in her presence. Mm-hmm. And as well as Creating a Charmed Life did. I mean, that was a really magical, magical book. Everybody loved it. They still love it. They're still buying it around the world. But that was that book. And then I was working on another one. So I wrote a book called Lit From Within about bringing out your inner beauty. And by then I'd moved to New York and they called again. And I did get to go to Chicago. And with that one, which is really fun, if people go to my YouTube channel, which is Victoria Moran NYC, on my main reel, there's a clip from that. And it was so much fun because without knowing that I did it, set Oprah up for a laugh. And the topic was inner beauty and feeling good about yourself. And I was explaining how a woman that I knew here visited India and she considered herself overweight and was always trying to fix that in various ways. But in India, people would come up to her and say, "You are so fat and so beautiful. I try to be fat and I can't. What's your secret?"
Oh my God.
After I said that, Oprah, with her incredible sense of comic timing, just waited, beat, beat. And then she goes, "Can't wait to go to India." And she got this giant applause. I mean, it was wonderful. It's like, oh, this is why the straight men enjoy what they do in a comedy team. So yeah, it was fabulous and wonderful. And I hope that, you know, one day there'll be something else with her. I know she's no longer doing the Super Soul Sunday, which I had kind of set my cap on, but she'll do something. She doesn't stop.
That's right. Well, she has a wonderful sense of humor, and the idea that you could impress her is, my goodness, that's just something very rewarding, because she had at that time hundreds and hundreds of guests, but she always found a way to find that important part of a guest, the story behind the individual. Now, you're an author, you're a writer, a speaker, an animal advocate, and a spiritual adventurer. And that's what I love about you. I've known of you for quite a while and have been a huge fan. And as a matter of fact, I know that out of all the books you've authored, I want to show two that I have. And then the other ones are, there's one that's in the audio, but this one's very important. It's part of a program that we'll talk about, the Main Street Vegan Academy Cookbook. I had to get this cookbook because it's really, the contributors are people that have completed your program. So we'll talk about that. And then the Good Karma Diet is just one of many where you really bring in a combination of your passion for supporting animals and supporting people in health. And Victoria, one of the things of the many that I enjoy about you, one of the things is that approach that you take, the positive, the compassionate aspect of you in your activism. So how do you do it after all these years of still knowing that animals are suffering and that people are suffering too as a result of health issues? Mm-hmm. What keeps you going so that you can continue to shine this beautiful light in the work that you do?
Well, I'm finding that it's really about being happy myself, which is hard when you know about the suffering in the world. I remember, oh my gosh, this was so long ago, 1977, the World Vegetarian Congress at Orono, Maine, the first time that had happened in the U.S. in the 20th century. And I was there as a speaker, and I had this wonderful kind of the star can't come, and so the stand-in gets to go on. The woman who was going to do the cruelty-free fashion show couldn't come, so I got to do it. And I was talking to the people who wanted to model, and there was this lovely young woman, beautiful young woman. And I said, "Are you actually a model? I mean, you look like a model, you move like a model, you just know exactly what to do." And she said, "Well, I used to model, but now I don't do anything. I'm too depressed because of the animals." And I remember thinking in that moment, that's what we can't be, because in that state, we can't help anybody. So I tried to encourage her as best I could. I hope she went on and got over her depression, because you have to have enough going in your own life so that it's like the put on your mask first and then, you know, the person you're flying with. So I find that Yes, I know that the suffering is beyond comprehension. And I also know that as a single human being, I'm only going to be able to alleviate some of it. But I want to be sure that however much I have been allotted to be able to alleviate, that I will meet that quota. And the only way I can do that is if I take care of myself, if I'm healthy, if I'm rested, if I have energy, if I haven't overscheduled, which is a terrible character defect. I overschedule just ridiculously. And I try, you know, when I'm looking at these things that I do that I wish I didn't do, if I can bring in the animals, it's like, you don't need to crowd your calendar so that you can't find yourself, because those animals are counting on you. And that helps me. That's a way that even though knowing about the suffering is very, very difficult, I can use that knowledge to take care of myself so that I can continue to do the work.
So self-care is key.
It's huge. And it's not selfish. You know, we always think that we're supposed to give to others first, but the self-care is so that we can give to others. Mm-hmm. I finally figured that out. I thought it's what comes first, others, self. Of course it's others. That's how you be a good person. But it's self because you have to take care of yourself. No, it's others. Therefore, it has to be self. They're hand in glove.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you saw recently, if you follow James Aspie, who you know is a very dedicated animal activist. He recently put out a video of why he sort of had disappeared from social media for about a year. I think even from his YouTube channel, he had manifested physical pain that probably he internalized. He tried to explain in the video of just having internalized so much of what he sees of animal, you know, in the content when we're talking about animal cruelty associated with the food industry. He was having extreme pain that led to painkillers that got him a little addicted. And we know how those stories go. And then he discovered another doctor who helps to release the trauma from the body. And he said he couldn't even go 15 minutes without feeling pain. And now that he's doing the spiritual work and the self-care work and other things like that, it seems like the physical pain is starting to alleviate a little bit. But hearing his story was so profound, Victoria, because I thought a lot of times, like you said, like if we focus on the suffering and we feel helpless because we don't know how we can help, and yet we continue to internalize it and worry and stress about the things that we cannot change immediately, we are the ones that are going to shut down and not be as effective.
It's so true. And I'm reminded of when my daughter was acting as a child. She's still a performer, but when she was a teenager, she had the lead role in a play called Kinder Transport, which was about English people taking Jewish children from Nazi-occupied lands and adopting them. And the woman who played the mother of my daughter's character, a little girl who was taken on the Kinder Transport, was a method actor. And method actors try to really get into their character, become the character, live the life of the character. And I remember seeing her backstage before every performance, and she would feel like she was a woman in a concentration camp who had lost her only child. And by the end of the run of that show, which was 6 weeks, she actually was hospitalized because those thoughts, you know, our brain can't tell the difference between what we're experiencing, what we tell it, what we really truly embody and feel, and what's actually going on. And so she was very sick, and it took her quite some time to get beyond that. So just as that negative thing can happen, we can also use thoughts to lift ourselves up. And I think this is why visiting animal sanctuaries. It's so wonderful because even though it's a tiny, minuscule percentage of the animals suffering in the agriculture system, we at least see some hope and we see some joy. And even with companion animals, their joy is so infectious. I'm without a dog right now, but I go to this dog cafe, the Black Lab Cafe on the Upper West Side, and I get to hang out with everybody else's dogs. And I think, you know, if you have children, if you have grandchildren, just, you know, hanging out with friends, being around uplift is so important. And I don't think we talk about that enough in the plant-based movement, because we see that what the food does for us is so incredible. We forget that we are whole people with other aspects too. And if we get the food going on and the emotional and the social, I mean, then we can just have it all. I mean, to the point that Earth can provide that.
Absolutely. So speaking of our companion friends, I never had a dog. I grew up in a very strict home where my father was against having animals in the home. And we became vegan, my husband and I, and my heart began to open in terms of noticing. Suddenly I noticed the cats a little bit more. I noticed the dogs a little bit more. And I said to my husband one day, when I fell in love with my sister's dog, I said, I think I'm ready for a dog. And he was actually scared. He said, you've never had a dog. You'll never know how to take care of him. You know, he's going to wake you up in the morning. You're going to have to take him for walks, and just made me overwhelmed, like a little bit scared. But I said, I'm ready. And we ended up adopting my dog. And the love that I have for my dog, it's like such a special love that I've never experienced. And I can see how therapy dogs, my dog is not considered a therapy dog, but I can see how they help us in terms of offering companionship, in terms of reducing our stress levels. So there are so many benefits to loving animals. And I have gone to animal sanctuaries and I feel the same way, Victoria. I don't know these animals, but I feel a profound connection with them.
They are pretty remarkable. You know, I almost feel like they're us minus complications. And when I think about the kind of person I want to be, is I want to be the person that my dog was. My dog, Forbes, passed away in October. Here's my WWFD bracelet. What would Forbes do?
I love that.
He was so responsive. And animals also, maybe because of their ability to smell or some other kind of capacity that they have, they know when someone is physically or emotionally suffering. And they'll just glom onto you with this intent of healing. It certainly seems to me. We used to call him Dr. Forbes. So when he died, I made three promises to him. I said, I will take care of myself, because it's so easy not to. I mean, my history is growing up as a food addict, always battling weight issues, never quite catching up with other young people because I just felt that I physically wasn't up to it. And so a lot of the self-care practices I had to learn as an adult, and kind of like learning a language, it's harder for them to stick when you learn them later. So I told him that. Then I said, I will be in life as you were up to the very last moment, which he totally was. I mean, he, even though he was very sick with a very aggressive kind of cancer, he was just there. He was like, what's cool? What's the most fun? What can we do? Ooh, don't feel like my walk, but you know, you could sure give me a treat. And I said, okay, Forbes, I'm going to be in life like that. And then the third thing was to redouble my efforts to help save other animals as long as I'm on this earth, or as long as I'm healthy enough, which, you know, I try to live in a way that will be until the day I leave here, that I really want my life to count for something in terms of ending suffering.
And I'm aware of Forbes' passing. You shared that on social media. And I'm telling you, as you're speaking about the promises you made him, I'm getting a little emotional just because it's such a tremendous loss. I think I heard about, and I don't remember, but there are people that offer support in terms of, you know, being there for you if in helping you experience and grieve the loss of an animal. And
there are. And may I recommend some really good ones?
Please. I might have heard it on your show. That's probably how I know about this.
Well, the person that I want to recommend first is the animal grief counselor that I have been working with. And I know him because he is a graduate of Main Street Vegan Academy, which is a program that I run that trains and certifies vegan coaches. But his name is Russell Ellevin, E-L-L-E-V-E-N. And he is a Unitarian Universalist minister. And I'll give you his contact information that you can put in the show notes. And he is absolutely phenomenal. I cannot speak highly enough of him. And someone else who has helped us out with some group grief support things is Kimberly Wilson. And her website is Tranquility Du Jour. I think it's also KimberlyWilson.com, but I'll give that to you, Maya. Mm-hmm. And she's a wonderful woman, also a graduate of Main Street Vegan Academy. She's a psychologist by training and an animal person by heart. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple. And then something else that I'll share, if anybody is interested in this sort of thing, something that I'm part of is the Compassion Consortium, which is an interfaith online spiritual center for animal advocates. And part of the Compassion Consortium's ministry is that we run a training program for animal chaplains. And this trains people to do this kind of work with pet loss, pet grief, but also other things. You know, what do you do when you're on the road and you see that, you know, somebody just got hit by a car? Do you just drive on by? Well, maybe. Or maybe you want to give them a little funeral. You know, these things are all, you know, people are different. And some people are, that wouldn't be what they would do. But the animal chaplaincy program that's part of Compassion Consortium is very, very cool. There'll be another class next fall. And that's compassionconsortium.org.
This is really great that you're, I'm so glad you mentioned all of this. And as you're saying, if you happen to have seen someone, I don't know if you were referring to animals as well, being hit on the road or struck. I sort of witnessed that as my husband. We were in our camper van, so we were headed back home when I saw on the other side of the road, the opposite side, I saw an animal that had just been struck. I didn't see the actual, but it was so hard for me to witness, Victoria. He was jolting. I don't know how to say it, but he was shaking and trying to get out of the road and more cars were coming. And I noticed that Riz was driving. And then I said, no, like I just reacted. No, we got to go back. We got it. Like, how do you get in front of the dog? So that other, but fortunately what ended up happening is one of the vehicles stopped in front of it to render aid. And then we just kept going because someone did stop, but I was horrified. The animal was not dead. It was fighting for his life. And the fact that, you know, there are people, I feel like more and more people are starting to consider this, that we have to rescue these animals that are like, even now, so many animals are being abandoned because their owners, their people went back to work after the pandemic and it started, you know. And it's so heartbreaking that right now there are a lot of animals that are being put down as well. And it's so hard not to internalize it, not to want to rescue all of those animals.
Yeah.
We adopted our dog, but not because he's not a COVID dog. He's a dog that we have because my heart opened. It's a whole different story. He's not out of convenience.
Yes.
It's a whole different story. It's knowing that we found him on Craigslist. His people wanted to get rid of him. They didn't want him. And it breaks my heart when we brought him home. He didn't even feel scared. He didn't run away like, did you kidnap me? Why am I here? He was just like, I'm here. So
that's a wonderful story. And I'm glad you brought up the road. I never really thought about that. You know, my emphasis has been on farmed animals and the animals that we eat and also companion animals. But I've learned from Reverend Sarah Bowen, who runs the animal chaplaincy program, that driving safely and driving a little bit under the speed limit is an animal rights activity. It's something that we can do to recognize that we're not the only ones here, that we do share the roads with deer and dogs and tortoises and squirrels and others. And that to be that little bit extra careful, some people say, well, I want to help animals and I don't have much time. Well, there's something you can do. You can be aware of them when you drive. And since I mentioned Reverend Sarah, I also want to mention her book, which is called Sacred Send-Offs, which is an animal chaplain's guide to companion animal loss, grief, and recovery. A wonderful book.
Thank you. And yes, I do drive. With that, I take into consideration that even cows can drift off onto the roads. They can get off the land where they're at and be on the road. And especially when we're driving, we're in Texas. So if we're between cities and we're driving through the fields or in the open area, I take into account the fact that an animal can cross the road. That's just like part of my way of thinking. And well, let's talk more about that. Let's talk more about, because I am an ethical vegan. We don't talk about it too much on my podcast because I tend to focus on the health aspect of everything. But whenever I get a chance, I do talk about the fact that when we talk about our concerns about animals, we're really talking about the food that ends up on people's plate, the animals they are eating.
Because that's the greatest number. The numbers are astronomical. And yet we relate when we hear about one. You know, when you talked about the cow in the road, it reminds me of a story told by Timothy Patcherat, who wrote a book called Every 12 Seconds about being an undercover worker in a slaughterhouse when he was working on his PhD. So he was there with his co-workers, and they just figured, you know, he was another guy working in a slaughterhouse. And they were all in the lunchroom, and something came on the local news that a cow had escaped from another slaughterhouse in the area. And all the workers cheered for the cow. So we all have a heart for the one. And sometimes if other ethical vegans are listening and they want to try to reach somebody, a great way to reach them is with a story of one being. And it's the same with the health. You know, if somebody has a really great story of how they recovered their health, even if their condition was something other than what somebody's interested in, recovery is recovery. And it people respond.
Yeah, they really do. And that's the part where, because many of us do love animals, it's just making the connection and seeing that a cow also has a family. And when she gives birth, it's, you know, we do something with her calf, and we either take the calf away and, you know, we use the mother cow for the milk, or there's just so many things that are hard to even talk about because of the suffering. We contribute to it just because we don't see it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And it's been kept like that. The system is designed so that we're not aware of how our food is produced and what the animals endure. And we've watched several of the documentaries. And as a matter of fact, I want to mention that how I met you in person was a few years ago when a prayer for compassion was going to be screened. I think your team reached out to us and a couple of other people here in Dallas and asked about, you know, screening the movie. And we did it at Unity. I don't know if you remember that. And I want to say you came out either first time or the second time. Yes. And every time I watch a movie that goes into detail about the impact of the animal agriculture, it's a reminder of why I'm on the right path in terms of being vegan. And it's hard to watch, very difficult to watch. And tell us about that. Tell us about A Prayer for Compassion and your involvement.
Yes. Well, I was invited by the filmmaker, Thomas Jackson, who just very straightforwardly said, would you like to produce my next documentary? And my first thought is, I don't know how to produce a documentary. And I always thought about, well, producers, aren't those the people in the movie business who bring the $1 million? But then he said, it's about spirituality and food choices. And it's like, oh my God, if I have to come up with $1 million, I guess I have to. Yes, yes, I will do this. Well, what I then learned is documentaries don't cost that much. So we just started, and we started reaching out, and we did a little crowdfunder, and some other people came on in the production capacity. And Thomas traveled across the U.S. a couple of times, and he went to the climate conference in Morocco. Then he went all through India. One of our producers is Dr. Silas Rao, who said, you need to go to India because even though it's a largely vegetarian country, there is this cultural connection to dairy. So everything happened to make the film, and it's a lot of work. It may be the hardest I've ever worked, and I consider myself a hard worker, but I remember just before the 2019 world premiere here in New York, I just thought, I wonder if I will ever have any energy again. I'm just completely exhausted because there's so many parts of making a movie, but it's done really well. It's had a lot of viewership around the world. And I think it also helped to spark a lot of the interest in the intersectionality of faith, spiritual traditions, and what we eat, because it's so interesting. If you look at the seven deadly sins, for instance, which comes out of Christian theology, and one of them is gluttony. When has anybody ever heard a sermon or a homily on gluttony? It's just never talked about. And this whole idea of, you know, kindness for animals and love all God's creatures and all God's creatures got a place in the choir, but they don't. And so I think that A Prayer for Compassion really awakened a lot of that. And at the time that Thomas started A Prayer for Compassion, they also started the Interfaith Vegan Coalition, which brings groups together that are spiritual or religious and that also want to bring other beings into the mix. And then certainly also the health aspects, because taking care of our body is something that most traditions talk about, just not a lot. And something that I have found, that wonderful quotation from Margaret Mead, that it's easier to change a man's religion than it is to change his diet, is so true. Because if you say to people, sign my petition, you know, not put $20 into this thing or whatever, people will do that. But when it's, and then change how you eat, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. So, and as a matter of fact, that quote is so relatable. It is so true. I made the mistake, and I often say this, that when I went vegan, I wanted to convert everyone and I was hardcore. And as a result, I have not been able to convert or to influence the closest people to me. I've learned to sit back and allow and work on building my relationship with those people that I care about. So do you have a tip in terms of what we can do when we first get on board, make that change? Should we be gentle in our approach to, you know, to reach out to other people?
Well, perhaps should, but nobody wants to be told what they should do. And, you know, I wonder if being a new vegan is a little bit like being a teenager. And should teenagers not experiment with things? Should they not rebel against their parents? Well, I don't know. It's pretty unpleasant. And yet I think it's what they're supposed to do. It's what they need to go through. And maybe all of us as a new vegan needed to do that for the cause. It would probably be better if we focused on what I like to call attractivism or attraction activism. There's something in the 12-step programs in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you have what somebody else wants, they will do what you did to get it. So if you have more energy, if you're looking better, if you got off some medication, if your cholesterol is down and your A1C is down and you're working out again, people are going to say, what are you doing? And then you tell them, and they might not decide that they're going to do that right that day, but they've asked the question because they were curious. It's a whole other thing. You know, if somebody comes to you with their issue and, you know, maybe they're passionate about some cause that, you know, you haven't thought about, it'll be like, okay, all right, this is your cause. I accept that. Here's 10 bucks. And that's all. But then if you find something, maybe you're online and you're scrolling through and you learn about, I don't know, literacy or something, that you didn't know the statistics before. You didn't know that adults need to be taught to read and you've got a little time. Then you're going to ask questions. Can I be a literacy volunteer? What can I do? How can I help? It's a whole different thing than if somebody, you know, pushes it on you. So as vegans, I think if we can just shine our light, bring the best food to the potluck, and give vegan gifts. I mean, nobody is going to turn down your gift just because it doesn't have meat, eggs, or dairy in it. And it, these are just ways that we can reach people without being pushy. You know, you make some kind of maybe Dr. Furman's healthy black bean brownies, and you bring it to the office, and you don't go of vegan, but you put little recipe cards so everybody knows what's in them.
Yeah. Okay. And you just mentioned gifts too. So I'm doing a series for December of holiday gift ideas that people can either gift to themselves or loved ones. And so I've been interviewing people that either have a service, a book, a product, whatever it may be, but things that we can give loved ones for the holidays. So do you have a recommendation?
Oh boy. Well, I guess in terms of things,
your book, maybe?
Pardon?
I said your book, maybe one of your books.
You know, books are great. If somebody is interested in veganism, maybe they're a pregan, then I would highly recommend my book, Main Street Vegan, because it's a primer and it's very friendly, very understanding of people. I kind of got a, I just call it a higher power download about writing that book and exactly what the tone was supposed to be and who it was supposed to be geared to. And so it's very, very friendly. I would not give that book to somebody who has no interest in veganism, who wants to be keto, who tells you to leave them alone about it. But for somebody who's like, oh, it's cool what you're doing, I'm kind of interested. Yeah, Main Street Vegan would be a good one for them. Thanks for asking.
Okay. Yes. You know, so I had a gentleman, a young guy on the show. I think you might enjoy on your show. His name is June and he's in Bali and he's a coach, a life coach that supports vegans in self-care and releasing some of the trauma, like what we've been talking about. And I told him about a recent experience that my husband and I had as we reunited with some of his college roommates from back in the day. And we rented a house. We all stayed together, and I would have prefer for my husband to warn them, to tell them that we had dietary restrictions just to address the awkwardness. But it wasn't addressed until we decided to do groceries, and then it just felt very awkward. And so he said, you know, one of the things that I probably could have done was just kind of said while we were having dinner, boy, it feels a little awkward, you know, that we're eating differently than you guys. And does anybody else feel a little strange or awkward or uncomfortable, just to call it out? So that we can address the elephant in the room and then be done with that. Instead, we found ourselves having to kind of explain. And I mean, it always gives us an opportunity to share with others why eating plant-based is good for our health. And then if the conversation permits, then we can talk about the environment and the animals as well. Any recommendations about that as we head into the holidays and reunite with loved ones?
I would keep it really light. And you can tell, you know, we all have an intuitive sense, and we know if somebody's really interested. And if they are, then you can say, I'd love to talk to you later. You know, this topic always comes up at a meal when other people are eating what they eat. And that's not the time to talk about this. And if you can just diffuse it a little bit by saying, like, yeah, I'm doing this plant-based thing for my health. Oh, well, what do you eat? And blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, let's talk about that later. And let's just enjoy our meal right now. And then if somebody is really interested, just give them all the information you think they can handle. Sometimes I have to slow myself down and not give people too much. But, you know, you can tell them your story, because we love hearing one another's stories. We are a storytelling species. So whatever got you, whether it was a video you saw online, whether it was a doctor's pronouncement about your health that led you to start looking, whatever it is, it's interesting to your fellow humans. And then you can maybe recommend a couple of favorite websites. I always recommend nutritionfacts.org because everybody likes videos and most people respect science, and all of Dr. Greger's videos fit those criteria. And then maybe a book, maybe some recipes or just even one of the free recipe guides. I was just ordering a bunch of African-American vegan starter guides because it's just, it's a wonderful, wonderful collection and you can get it free. Farm Sanctuary is part of that. PETA has a vegan starter guide. Mercy for Animals has one. And it's good. You can get these for free and you just keep a stack of them. And then when people say, oh, tell me about what you're doing, you just hand them that. And nobody can argue with something that's in a magazine. You know, it's like they can read and come back to you and argue later. But if you start talking, especially if you talk, if one person comes up to you one-on-one, that's a whole other thing. But if you're at a table of 8 or 10 people and somebody mm-hmm. asks because they're interested, you can know that there is somebody else at that table who is doing paleo and they love it and they're going to bring that up. And there's somebody else who's newly dating a hunter and the hunter is at the table and that's just not going to be good for them. And so, you know, as a vegan, as an ethical vegan, I want everybody to be vegan yesterday. You know, I want the hunter and his girlfriend. But what I know is that today might not be the time for them unless they ask. So one-on-one, provide them with materials. And, you know, if you're a spiritual person, just ask a conduit for this information. Mm. And I feel that when we ask and really mean it, we get answered. We get answered positively.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I hope my listeners are listening to this. I mean, this is a key thing. I actually wanted to take, because I have some guides from PCRM, which are also like the vegetarian starter kit that we give to our patients. And I wanted to sneak some of those into my luggage and have them just in case the right person, just in case an individual was interested. And then I didn't. I sort of second-guessed myself. And there was one person that approached me that weekend while I was in the kitchen, and we had a very comfortable conversation. And I thought I could have given him the guide because he was willing to listen. And so you just never know who's going to be ready. So I don't want to forget to talk about your podcast and then the Main Street Vegan Academy. And
yes,
that one
it is.
I really want to talk about that one because I actually thought, Victoria, I wanted to take your training at one time. And I know that the pandemic happened, but let's start with your podcast. You recently rebranded.
Yes.
I love that the podcast is your name. I love that your podcast is now the Victoria Moran Podcast. Congratulations.
Thank you. And what I love is the subtitle, which is Meetings with Remarkable Women.
Yes.
So I only have women guests, and maybe at Father's Day, I might have a man once a year. I have a wonderful physiatrist here in New York City who's a yogi. His name is Dr. Lauren Fishman. He got a degree in philosophy at Oxford and then went to India and knocked on the door of the legendary yogi BKS Iyengar and said, "Can I study with you?" So he lived with Iyengar for a year, then came back to the States and went to medical school. And he specializes in osteoporosis, which I know is something that's a problem for a lot of women. So I may make an exception at Father's Day time and have him on. But basically, I have remarkable women. And there are so many of us. I mean, it's like that movie Steel Magnolias that really looked at the heart and soul of a group of women, very different women, but all steel magnolias, all this kind of maybe fragile exterior, but this incredible strength. So part of the strategy of doing the podcast this way after 10 years of the Main Street Vegan podcast is that I don't want to be preaching to the choir. I want to reach out to mainstream people. And then every third or fourth episode, I don't know how it's going to actually play out, when I have a specifically vegan or plant-based topic, then the people who came for the other topics will stay. But I have to tell you, Maya, it's so interesting talking with people who are not vegan because the vocabulary is different. And I had somebody use as an allusion the cost of butter. And I said, well, as I'm a vegan, I'm happy that it's expensive. And she said, oh, well, it was unsalted. And my heart just fell because I am a health person. And I really believe in the power of diet and lifestyle to improve our health, to ward off disease. I think it can be near miraculous. But I am an ethical vegan first. And for this person to think that I'd be okay with butter if it was unsalted kind of broke my heart. So then I had somebody use an analogy about when the exterminators come to get rodents out of your house. And it's like, I'm a vegan, I'm not a fanatic, and I understand that there are times that you need exterminators. But I don't like to just bring that up as a side issue because it's sad to me when, you know, when anybody has to leave this earth, even when, you know, survival of the fittest and all that stuff, sometimes that's what has to happen. So it's interesting. It's different. And I love it. I love these women that I talk to. And as you know, it's just such a privilege to get to listen to people who are thoughtful and who are, at least in their realm, changing the world.
Yes, I think it's beautiful. So when you rebranded with your name, you made that decision to also only feature women.
Well, this concept started on my 18th birthday when I moved to London. And there was a movie playing in the West End about the philosopher Gurdjieff, and it was called Meetings with Remarkable Men. I frankly didn't like the movie all that much, but I loved the title, and I made a commitment at age 18 that my life was going to be filled with meetings with remarkable people. And now at this point in my life, I want to share some of those remarkable people with others. But the movie was Remarkable Men. I want to do Remarkable Women, because there are plenty of us, and we are getting our due much more than we ever did in history. But I'm not sure we've quite caught up yet. And until we do, it's going to be meetings with remarkable women.
I love it. I love it. I recently, so speaking of like your guests not necessarily having to be vegan, I think that I'm pretty clear that I am. And I, you know, I study the people that are interested in coming on the show, but I did bring the co-founder of a non-alcoholic company. I did bring her on the show because I wanted to introduce her to people who are interested in ending their relationship with alcohol. And so we were talking, she wanted to share a little bit about her health journey and went down the list of how she gave up gluten and other things, but the word plant-based or going vegan never came up. So it's always kind of like this fine line of how do you correct someone? Or in this case, it was a comfortable conversation. I asked her about the drinks and whether they were vegan, because we know that not everything that's not alcoholic is necessarily vegan. So she actually went out of her way to contact her vendors, because she owns a company that promotes small entrepreneurs that have wine and spirits. And so all of these are non-alcoholic. And so she went out of her way to contact all the vendors to find out whether their product was vegan or not. And even contacted me and said, some of the wine may not be vegan. It's kind of like de-alcoholized wine because there was egg that was used, or the sugar is not vegan. And she says, I learned that sugar is not necessarily vegan. And she explained it to me. And I said, you know, thank you so much for going out of your way, for creating a category on your website that's specifically for vegans, because otherwise you would be leaving out a large group of people who would buy your product if it were vegan. So now it's vegan and non-alcoholic.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
It is. Yeah. And then I had another person come on who's the CEO of a plant-based milk. That is one of the cleaner ones. And now the thing is that in this conversation, he too wanted to share his health journey and then mentioned that he teaches his children how to eat hamburgers without the bun, and in place they use the lettuce. I just thought to myself, I had to clarify that we promote healthy living, and so that nutrition is absolutely important to me. That's why I had him on the show to talk about the alternative milk that he has. So it's very interesting how sometimes I have to kind of I, you know, maybe just kind of say I'm not endorsing that person's lifestyle, but I think the product is great. How do you do it? Do you ever have a situation like that?
Well, all I've had so far, I've only been doing the newly branded podcast since September. And if it's just an allusion to something, I just cut it out in the editing. There was one person that I had invited on, and I knew she was a lacto-vegetarian. I knew that she was an Ayurvedic person, and I do a lot with Ayurveda in my own life. And I love it, but I certainly do it as a vegan, and I don't use ghee or butter or any kind of dairy. And I thought, you know, she can come on, she can talk about Ayurveda, she can, you know, be wonderful. So she gave me a copy of her book, and I took it home in the subway. Beautiful book, beautifully illustrated. And I'm reading through, and when I got to the chapter on dairy, it was a promotion of dairy, which is her right.
Oh, I can't tell
other people how to live or what to do. But I just couldn't have her on and promote her book, which celebrates a product that I believe to be cruel and unhealthy. But the difference with the unhealthy, at least in my mind, is people have a right to do what they want to do with their own health. And I realize some people say, yeah, but that makes your insurance premiums higher. I know that's true. But the fact is, I don't run the universe. And if people want to eat burgers and fries and cherry pies, that's their choice. But if somebody was harming, say if somebody was harming a dog or a cat, I would try to stop that. And when somebody's harming cows and pigs and chickens, I feel that same kind of responsibility, not in a rude way, because I know there's all sorts of cultural and all that stuff going on with the way that people eat. But certainly, I can't be promoting something that to me is a moral issue.
That's how I feel. Integrity is important to me, and what I promote and what I endorse or who I have on is important to me. So, and I learned my lesson very early on in the podcasting world that I just didn't do enough research to find out what people stood for. And there was one individual that I couldn't air the episode because just the conversation didn't go where I wanted it to. And I just felt very uncomfortable about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most of my guests come from the College of Lifestyle Medicine, you know, being trained in that. But we also know that not everybody from there that's trained in lifestyle medicine is vegan or fully plant-based either. So it's you just have to really know who you're dealing with.
It's very tricky because on the one hand, vegans are a very small percentage of the population. So if we just want to move in that little tiny pool, we're going to keep recycling the same people. And there's something about a blend of ideas. I also believe that these people who are eating more plants are, as an aggregate, helping, you know, things to go forward, certainly for the climate, in a positive way. It's just the idea of your personal brand, my personal brand. What do we want to stand for? And there's this fine line between wanting to reach the outside world, the non-vegan world, and never wanting to promote people not seeking to move in this direction. It gets a little tricky. For me, the great shock to me with my first podcast, Main Street Vegan, that I had from 2018 until the network that hosted that, I did to close their doors in the spring of this year, I was at a veg fest in London, and people were coming up to me from all over the world. I remember Portugal and Romania and all kinds of places. And they said, "We love your podcast." And I thought, but you're already vegan. And I had the naive notion that because the book Main Street Vegan is great for longtime vegans, but it's really for newbies, I thought the people would listen to the podcast who were just curious about getting started. But what I saw was that I built a very large and loyal following of vegans. And it's wonderful to preach to the choir sometimes because we need some preaching. And there's a recidivism problem within veganism, so we need to be supported. And yet, I really want to try to reach other people. And I think sometimes, you know, I might stumble on that. I might make a mistake. And it's frightening now with the whole cancel culture and all of that. It used to be making a mistake was part of life, and now making a mistake can be terrifying. But I've just decided to go forward anyway. And if I make a mistake and somebody wants to do something terrible to me because of that, I'm just going to have to get up the next day and keep going for the animals, for people's health, for the planet. Because, you know, this is a big deal. I may not do it perfectly, but I am committed to doing it.
Absolutely. Yes. Part of my rebranding too, because I moved away from plant-based DFW as a local organization and what we do for the community. I changed the name of the podcast from that to Healthy Lifestyle Solutions, the more I dove into lifestyle medicine. But part of what drives me as well is the agony and the pain that my husband's patients go through. Because I hear it all the time. It's every day. It's something, or when Riz has to go in because a patient's not doing well. Knowing the suffering that happens with people is very hard. I remember when I met him, I thought, oh my God, your energy must be low. Aren't you impacted by seeing so much suffering after 25 years? And, but I also now know, I understand how what we suffered in our earlier years, childhood trauma, and it doesn't have to be a big T, it could be something smaller, affects our health. And stress, not having safe, loving relationships can affect people. But diet, I know, right, that nutrition is the biggest thing that it's going to affect people in terms of what they put in their body. And so for me, if I could shout it every day and say that that's the biggest component of it all, I would. But I wanted to rebrand to do the same thing, Victoria, to preach to the choir, Eve. I want my listeners to be people who feel that there is something that they can do to control or to prevent a disease or manage a condition that they currently have. And so if you can't start with diet, which we know is the biggest player, like the biggest component, then start by managing your stress or exercising. And it's part of an entire wellness program. At least that's how I feel. Whatever. In other words, let's move more towards health. And I'm just like you. I was very much into personal development. I can't tell you how many books I've read in the past. And plant-based nutrition, being a vegan, brought me back to everything about self-care. It brought me back to personal development because it is about the food, but it's also part of how we manage stress. It's about being in healthier relationship. I feel like it's just a whole, how would you say, like a program or a way of living that supports our overall health. And then maybe by, you know, my listeners listening to these pillars of lifestyle medicine, they'll also hear content like this about how we can also help our environment, and then raising the awareness of animal agriculture and how damaging it is to the animals when we don't need to. I mean, it's all about information, teaching people that you can have optimal health through plant-based nutrition. We just have to keep talking about that.
Yes.
And how, you know.
And we have to make it normal. We have to make it normal in America to eat plants. And it's not yet. It's considered alternative. And where I see the plant-based lifestyle, vegan eating, is that it's an alternative, sort of like you do you, I'll do me. And that's great because we weren't even there 10 years ago. But it needs to move from being the alternative to being the ideal. And even though things in India are not perfect, one thing that I loved in traveling in India was that the restaurants that weren't vegetarian would say regular or vegetarian plus meat. It was like the meat was the add-on. Where over here, if you go to a vegan restaurant, that's like a thing. You know? They only have vegan food there. But if that could become the norm, and then some people maybe still eat animal products. I mean, we would go so far. It would be like smoking. I mean, when I was growing up, everybody's dad smoked and half the moms and all the fancy movie stars smoked in all the movies. And now when you see somebody smoking, they're usually huddled against an office building in the snow because they're not allowed to smoke inside. That's how I want eating animal foods to become. I don't want to make some law and force people to not eat what they want, but I want the whole culture to grow and move in this upward progression so that somebody eating a burger will be huddled against the building because it's just such a faux pas to eat that stuff in polite company.
Yep, absolutely. I feel that even like when I'm checking out at the grocery store and all my food is there on the conveyor belt, I'm proud of my selection. And when people are standing in line watching me place my food there, I'm wondering if I'm somehow sending a message like, look at everything that I have. I have lots of colors.
You are, Maya, and I'm going to tell you my supermarket checkout story. This was many, many years ago. I was widowed young, and everybody said, don't do anything for the first year. So for 365 days, I didn't do anything. And then I just wanted so much to do something that I moved to the country. Now, I was living in Kansas City, Missouri then, so the country is really the country. You know, here in New York, people talk about the country, and they mean like, I don't know, Queens or something. But when you live in Missouri, the country is really the country. So my little 6-year-old daughter and I moved to the central Missouri Ozarks. And the first time we did a grocery run, I got all the beautiful kind of food like we eat. And the woman actually stopped the conveyor belt. And she looked at me and she said, I've had this job for 15 years. And I have never seen such pretty groceries. And that's always stuck with me because we want pretty groceries because pretty groceries make pretty people, healthy people, happy people, contented animals, good planet. You know, it all ripples out and it starts with pretty groceries.
Yes, it does. Ah, that's a wonderful story. I love it. So that means they're paying attention too. Let's talk about your program. And like I said, I'm holding up the cookbook, but really you have the Main Street Vegan Academy. Who is this academy for? Tell us about it. And you have such great people that have completed this training.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, the people who have come through Main Street Vegan Academy are extraordinary. And I finally figured out that it has to do with a level of courage. When people sign up for a course and it's fairly intense and they don't know everything about it before they come and they're willing to read some books and watch some documentaries and actually make some effort, they are extraordinary people. I'm just so proud of my graduates. So we started in 2012, and at that time we were in person in New York City, and now we're on Zoom, and it's actually better. And I wish I could communicate that because we have more instructors from more places. We have more hours, more classes, and practice time that we were not able to have when we were in person. It's all live and interactive. And so many people just say, oh, it's an online course. No, it's not an online course. It is a live Zoom course. It is recorded in case you need to miss a class or something like that. But it's really there to be connected. So we have three tiers, and that is vegan principles is the first one. And that includes health, taught by a registered dietitian, nutrition taught by a registered dietitian, plant-based health. We have two or three vegan physicians every time, plant-based physicians doing that. We also have ethical fashion. We have working with mixed and transitional families and the environment, all these wonderful classes with real experts, real stars in the plant-based world. Then we have the communication principles. So this is public speaking. This is how to communicate online, YouTube, all these ways that you can get these ideas that you have, this knowledge that you have, out into the world. And then we have business principles. So if you are an entrepreneur, or if you want to be a professional coach, because the certification we give is vegan lifestyle coach and educator, then we have the principles for that, how to get started in a small business if you've never done that before. So there's just all sorts of resources for everything. And then our graduates that you mentioned, they are magnificent. They really are. And if you look at our website, mainstreetvegan.com, particularly the second page, which says curriculum and enrollment details, you'll see many of our graduates listed as coaches, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. authors, influencers, and in the nonprofit sector. And they are just out there setting the world on fire in every kind of good way. So the next course is coming in September, and we're going to do that one weekend a month, September, October, November, and then one day in December. And it's just life-changing. Then we stay with people afterwards. And you don't have to hang out if you don't want to. Some people just take the class and they like it. I've never had a complaint. I've never had one person out of 35 cohorts ever ask for a refund. Everybody always gives us rave reviews. But if you don't want to stay connected, that's fine. But most people do. So we have a Facebook group, and we have reunions. We have a master class, which is fully optional every 3 years or so. And I'll just finish with what some of us are going to be doing here in New York City next week. One of our graduates is a young woman named Camille DeAngelis. She's a young adult author, and she's written a couple of nonfiction books, including one about vegan creativity, but she's mostly a novelist. And she wrote a novel just after she attended the academy. She started on this book called Bones and All. It's about a teenage cannibal, and it has vegan undertones. And she talks in the foreword and the afterword of the book about she wrote this as a vegan to help people kind of understand what it's all about. But it's also a gripping story. It's like a young adult coming of age horror story. And now it's a feature film. It's starring Taylor Russell and Timothée Chalamet, premiered at the Venice Film Festival. It has all this Oscar buzz. So it's opening around the country, I believe, the 23rd of November. It's opening in New York a little bit earlier. So Main Street Vegan Academy grads who are in this area are going to get together and go see this movie together and celebrate one of our own. So that's just the spirit of Main Street Vegan Academy. And I just invite people to go to mainstreetvegan.com and check us out. And if you have any questions, just ask. Because one thing you get if you come to the academy is me. I don't have grandchildren, but I have 600 academy graduates, and you can be my grandchild even if you're my age.
You have 600 graduates.
Yes, around the world, 32 countries on 6 continents.
Oh my God. I'm seeing here, I'm looking at your website, Liana Living, I never say her name right, but Liana Reisner, she completed your course?
She did, before she started Plant-Powered Metro New York. It seems like Main Street Vegan Academy inspires people to light the fire that was already in them with a little pilot light.
That's right. I see Angela Crawford, who's been on the show. Liana and Angela have been, and so many other great people. So yes, like you said, you reach people who are inspired, and then you equip them to go out and do what they in their heart want to do. But then you also support them with the communication skills and the business skills that a lot of us lack, because that's how you get the word out and how to be successful in something that you're passionate in.
Yes.
That's what you support. It's incredible. This is a beautiful program. And I had wondered how you pivoted during the pandemic, because one of the reasons I wanted to go, aside from the fact that I just love your program, I just love what you're about, but I wanted to go to New York as well and be with the group. But now your reach is on, you know, it's worldwide via Zoom. So people can do this from the comforts of their home.
Yes. And if you ever wanted to join the family, we would be beyond honored to have you.
Yeah, this is, and you touched on one of the components is also providing the education in terms of like even vegan, how did you say it? Like vegan clothing. I don't know if you touch on products as well, but I know that in our journey, as we come into this vegan world, we learn first about the food and then we begin to look at our surroundings in our home and question some of the things that we've had. Like at one point we had the leather couches and so we said goodbye to them and made that change. And another thing that was really touching for me, Victoria, was right before the pandemic, I wanted to buy a longer table because I wanted, we have a small space, but I wanted a table that can sit at least six people so that I can invite people over. And part of that was, you know, replacing our table, our dining table, and then bringing in like new plates, you know, and all that good stuff. And one day when I was having dinner with my husband, I said to him, oh my God, our table, our eatery, our dishes, had all that in because I knew I transitioned over to stainless steel pots and pans as well. And I said, oh my God, right now our meal and the way that it was cooked and how it's been served and what it's been served on has never seen torture. Like it's a true vegan experience, what we're having right now. Because I transitioned everything out of, you know, from where, how I once cooked animals to starting from scratch.
It was
this realization that, and now when I go out now, and then we move on to other areas, Victoria, like household products and personal products, you know,
yes.
and transitioning all that out. It's a journey.
It is. And what we try to do at Main Street Vegan Academy is create experts on the vegan lifestyle. These are people who know the whole umbrella. And in terms of the diet and nutrition part, everything that we teach is whole food plant-based. But not all of our students are whole food plant-based. And many of them are vegans, they're foodies, they're gourmets. So when you talk about the Main Street Vegan Academy cookbook, I didn't do the recipe part. I did the editorial parts, and our graduate, mm-hmm. J.L. Fields, who's a just magnificent entrepreneur, cookbook author, vegan spokesperson, mm-hmm. and powerhouse, she did the recipes, which came in from our various graduates, and they're not oil-free. Some of them have coconut oil, which mm-hmm. I just, you know, I there's a lot of heart disease in my family, so I'm pretty much oil free and I'm certainly not going to be getting into coconut oil. And yet to open the door as widely as we can and let people come in is what we're trying to do. But I do want all your listeners to know, if they do look at the cookbook, that the training is whole food plant-based. And then mm-hmm. people do what they want to do, which
yes.
is wonderful. This is America. This is why we're, you know, waving the flag. So,
yep. I mean, I'm trying to learn dishes that I can use to vegan, that I can use to transition family as we gather. I want to be able to cook foods that they will like. What we preach, what we encourage people to do is to stay with the whole food, minimize processing kind of thing, because we know that even if the food is vegan, but if it's heavily processed and with a lot of oil, sugar, and salt, you're still going to end up in the hospital. You can still have, mm-hmm. but it's one step at a time. So Victoria, I thought before, as we're wrapping up, I thought we could kind of lighten things up a little bit with some fun, rapid questions.
Ooh, that's fun.
And then, yeah, it's just another way to get to know you a little bit. And feel free to skip if nothing comes to mind. You can answer quickly, but if you want to, you know, elaborate, that's fine too.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready.
All right. What is the best thing that happened to you this year?
Starting Gyrotonics, which is a wonderful movement system that's sometimes called yoga for dancers. And I believe that it's getting me inside my body in a way I've never been before.
Wow, that is so new to me.
Look it up. I'm sure they have it in Dallas.
Okay. Yes. I like the idea of ecstatic dancing. This is, I don't know if it's something like this, but you say yoga for dancers.
Yeah.
You know,
it's often taught in Pilates studios because it has equipment, very different equipment from Pilates. Pilates has a lot of leather straps and things that just seem very masculine and harsh and certainly not vegan. And for gyrotonics, and this was probably not intentional, but they don't have that. It's just a much more fluid, feminine, wonderful experience. And I have never been a big exerciser. I saw that you had a copy there of my book, The Good Karma Diet. And in that book, I coin a phrase, activity resistance disorder, because I say if it could have initials and get reimbursed by insurance, then maybe people could get help for it. And activity resistance disorder is, yeah, I was exercising for 6 weeks, and now for whatever reason, I'm not. And it's a thing. And so for me, gyrotonics just gets me into my body so that I want to move it in other ways. I'm a convert.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think, and I often say this too, when we talk about, say, exercise as medicine, is pick something that you really love that gets you moving. And for me, it is dancing. Even if it's here in the house and I'm not out, I don't go to nightclubs anymore, but, so yes, I'm definitely going to look that up. Okay. Another question, since you do support women and that's what you're about today with your podcast, who is the best female role model in your life? You probably have had so many, and they don't have to be the best, but you probably have had so many role models in your life. Is there someone you can think of?
There are many, but I'm going to tell you that it's my first yoga teacher, Stella Chirfis. I moved to London on my 18th birthday, as I said. I'd read some books about yoga before I got there, and I found her as a teacher. And I thought, I didn't go to London after that. My student visa was 9 months, and then I had to come back. And it took me 10 years to get back over there. And when I looked her up, I couldn't find her. And for all these years, I thought perhaps she had passed away, when indeed she had been living on the continent. And then I found her in London when I went back for a veg fest, and I think it was 2015. And she is to this day teaching a senior class in chair yoga. She lives in a fourth floor walk up, and she's 96 years old. So role model, Stella.
And when she saw you, or what was the interaction like, the reunion?
Oh, it was great. And then I went to her class, and so everybody there, it's a senior class. So everybody is, you know, over 65, and some people are quite a bit older than that. And Stella said, "I want you to meet my former student, Victoria. She has been away for 53 years. And this lovely little lady, maybe in her 80s, looked back at me and said, "Welcome back."
Welcome back. Wow. That's so cool. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Etiquette. I know that this is big for you. I'm very interested in knowing, what is one etiquette tip or something that you wish most of us would practice when it comes to etiquette?
I think it's more of an attitude. I would say bring back class. And I want this hashtag become viral. Hashtag bring back class. In other words, just be courteous to somebody. This morning, I was in an elevator with a man who I know to be 80. And it was such a relief because I knew exactly who was supposed to get into the elevator first and who was supposed to leave first. And with other people, it's a little bit difficult because the rules have changed. We don't know what makes people comfortable or uncomfortable. So we have to do a lot more eye contact checking with people because we don't have so many rules anymore. But if you can just be aware that whether there's a rule that people still follow or whether there isn't, we just try to make things more comfortable for the other person. And I think that will help a lot in being able to communicate with one another through our political differences and whatever else is going on.
Absolutely. Yes. That's a great tip. I'm going through some of these. Let's see. When you were younger, and I think, you know, I've heard you talk about your earlier years, who did you want to be like?
Well, I wanted to be an actress. And what I see now is I never wanted to be an actress because I didn't want to be somebody else. I wanted to be myself. And so that's what I do as a speaker. And I'm never happier than when I'm up in front of a group speaking live and in person. And yeah. I recognized that a week ago, I was speaking for the Return to Eden retreat, Road to Eden retreat in Missouri. And I hadn't spoken for a big group since the start of the pandemic. And the minute I got up there, everything changed because mm-hmm. I was doing what I knew, even as a little tiny child, I was supposed to do. I was using my greatest gift. I feel I have the gift of words. I can write, I can speak. And what I love the most, well, I love both of them, but I really love speaking. And after my talk was over, and the talk was a cultural history of the compassionate diet. So it's basically talking about veganism and vegetarianism, you know, through the centuries. So it sounds like a very stuffy title, but I don't do things in a stuffy manner. And when I got off the platform and that was over and we were having a break, this woman who has heard me many times on Zoom, and you know, you can't be very dynamic on Zoom. It would, I don't know, blow out the connection or something. She said, "I didn't know you did that." And it was like, oh, thank you for recognizing that, because it's really what I love. And that was what my little girl wanted.
Oh, so sweet. Very nice. I'll ask one more question. And I don't know if you have the item with you because you had it earlier. What is something that you love that is vintage?
And I don't have the item. I know we had to change early on, just drilling through, I don't know, it sounded like in the apartment above me. So I moved to a different room. But I have a straw vintage cloche hat from the 1920s. And I put it on and I'm back in some kind of movie or I don't know, past life. It's just really fun. And what I'll do is take a picture in it. And if you want to put it somewhere, you can show sure. people my hat.
Yes. Is that what the year, the era that calls you? Because there's, you know, a lot of us think of the 1920s as just that, like we would have wanted to have experienced that time.
Yeah, I love the 1920s. I love the 1890s. And of course, I know that I also like plumbing. And I also like women's rights and civil rights and gay rights and all the things that we have now that people did not have then. But yes. So much of the fashion, the culture, certainly the literature of writing. You know, I love analog because I'm 72. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I spent much of my life in the analog era. And mm-hmm. I like typewriters and I like dictionaries and things that have tactile nature that we've mm-hmm. lost a lot of now. So yeah, that's some of my vintage yeah. quirkiness.
Yes. I love the hat. I saw it. I can see you. I can imagine you wearing it. And it's perfect for the 1920s look. That's wonderful. I too also, I have a lot of books. And I know that there was a time when someone said, you know, you can read your book on Kindle. And it's like, no, I still love books. I still connect with books and I love them so much. So that's going to be part of who I am forever.
And we are not alone in that because I've been in New York City for 22 years and I learn a lot by watching people on subways. So when I first moved here, half the people were behind newspapers and the other half had books. And it was wonderful because you could see what they were reading and you get some ideas that way. And yeah. the newspaper reading has dwindled to the point where you almost never see a paper newspaper. And for a while, I never saw books or very rarely because everybody had their Kindle. But mm-hmm. people got tired of that, even very young people. Now we're back to books in the subway. So I think that's a good move.
Yes, it is. I still go. There's a Half Price bookstore. It's a chain, I think, only in Texas, and it's discounted books and books that are reused and recycled. And I go there often and I film, you know, I look for books. I look for the books that I want to recommend. And I say to people, don't necessarily always buy brand new books. If you can purchase one that's slightly used, it's okay. And speaking of books, just one other thing. Do you have anything in the works now?
I do. I almost don't want to talk about it because the publishing process when you do traditional publishing is very slow. So I think we'll be looking at 2024, early 2024, okay. I hope. But it's called Age Like a Yogi, A Heavenly Path to a Dazzling Third Act. And I am so excited about it. And only one chapter is on yoga asana, yoga postures, the exercise that everybody thinks that yoga is, when indeed yoga is this incredible philosophy of life. And you don't have to change your religion. It's just a way to enrich life. And also with the Ayurvedic ideas. Ayurveda is yoga's sister science that had many of the ideas that we now know in lifestyle medicine 3,000-4,000 years ago. It's ancient and amazing, and it's still accepted by the World Health Organization as a viable medical system. So Age Like a Yogi combines the yoga philosophy and Ayurvedic ideas to help people be more vital and more content all through their lives.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to check for that in 2024 or so. And now you also have some online retreats. And I think I remember you doing things during the pandemic as well. But tell us about those because they'll start in mid-November.
Yes. Yeah, so when are we going to be airing this?
We are in mid-November.
We are in mid-November. Oh, right. There is one coming That's up true. The 19th and 20th. But if people have missed that, I'm not going to talk about it.
Right. We may not have time to edit by then. And okay. I'm traveling next week. But okay. Yes, when is your next online retreat?
Okay. Then I'm just going through my calendar here. Let me go months instead of weeks or we'll be sitting. We don't want to do that. Okay. Oh, this is an exciting one. And I think your listeners will like it. This is our Ageless New Year retreat. And that is going to be based on my MEND program, which is meditation, exercise, nourishment, and detoxification. And it's going to be a full Zoom retreat, about 3 hours, 3.5 hours in an afternoon on January 7th. So just there at the beginning of the year. But for those who love it and want to continue, there's going to be a membership group and things like that. None of that's required. If you just want to come and have a great one-time class, that's good. And the cool thing about that class is that for the price of coming to the class, which is not very much, you also get a free brand new copy of my book, Younger by the Day, which is a day book that helps people figure out how to rejuvenate every single day throughout the year. And then the last one I'll talk about, because I don't want to overwhelm people, I'm doing one on February 11th and 12th called Acing Age with Ayurveda. And it's all vegan Ayurveda, of course. No ghee, no dairy products or anything like that. But Ayurveda is called the science of life, or sometimes the science of long life. And they have the most incredible take on the over 50 decades, the kind of postmenopausal years for women, and what happens and how we can slow down some of the signs of aging that we're not interested in experiencing, and how we can accept some of the inevitable. And, you know, if you're in your 50s and 60s, you know, just don't accept anything. You can you can work with turning the clock back. You get a little bit older and you come to see, okay, you know what? I see that life is an arc and I know what side of that arc I'm on, but I can still be really healthy, really vital, really vibrant, and enjoy every single day that I have on this planet. So Acing Age with Ayurveda. And people should be able to find those pretty soon on my website, victoriamoran.com. I actually have two websites. So mainstreetvegan.com, that's for Main Street Vegan Academy. victoriamoran.com is for everything else.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. I'm so looking forward to all of this that you're putting together. And do you have a final message for my listeners?
Just that people like you and your incredible husband are what keeps this world going. You know, there have been lots of stories and myths in different traditions around the world that God or the gods would come down to earth looking for a few good people. And in finding them, they decided that the earth could go forward. Well, right now we really are looking at, oh my goodness, the potential for things that aren't great. But there are some really good people doing some really good things. You and your husband are certainly two of them. And I'll bet your listeners are in that group too. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Victoria. And the same with you. You are an inspiration. I love what you're about, your energy. And you really, truly are a light. And I thank you for all that you do. And I'm excited about your new, the rebranding of your podcast and the fact that you've earned using your name, the Victoria Moran. Did I say?
You did. You did.
I questioned myself, the Victoria
now
Moran.
Now you got it. We'll just have to work on Oprah.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Thank you so much for your time, Victoria.
Thank you. All the best.
You've been listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast with your host, Maya Acosta. If you've enjoyed this podcast, do us a favor and share with one friend who can benefit from this episode. Feel free to leave us an honest review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us to spread our message. Thanks for listening.